Good morning. So last time we talked a bit about representing negative numbers. And we had these three schemes, one of which was the winner. All these schemes had in common that we have the top bit be a signed bit, and when it was zero, it was just the same as an unsigned number. So for small numbers, it was exactly the same bit pattern. Conversion was really easy. And there was a difference in what we did for the negative numbers. So we had the simplest, sort of conceptually scheme was signing magnitude. We just have that sign bit be a negative sum. We just multiply the whole thing by minus one if the sign bit is set, otherwise keep it the same. We had one's complement, where instead of just having the sign bit be changed to make a number negative, we flip all the bits. And this had the nice property that now addition worked basically the same, except for the problem of crossing zero. And then we did this additional step of what's called two's complement, where we flip all the bits and add one, so we offset our negative numbers by one, so there's not two zeros, so we don't have to worry about zero when we're doing addition. And it turned out pretty miraculously that addition and subtraction on two's complement is exactly the same as on unsigned. We just do the addition with unsigned numbers, we look at our bit pattern, we pretend it's two's complement, and it just works. Which is really nice for implementing hardware, because now we don't have to have two versions of all our addition and subtraction hardware. And even for multiplication and division, it's almost the same. So then we talked about our last missing piece of numbers we'd like to represent, which are non-whole numbers. So all the schemes we saw before, we assume we had whole numbers, or we had kind of a rational class, but that's not really a type we've seen in a programming language as a built-in type before. So we had one thing called fixed point. And that was our simplest scheme. There, you just store a number and you say there's going to be a binary point in the middle of this. You choose a location for it, a fixed location, hence fixed point. And this is a very nice scheme. It's very efficient, but it's not very flexible. So we had our alternative, which is called floating point, where we store base 2 scientific notation, and the floating point comes because our binary point is wherever this exponent field says it is, and we can make that exponent field have a pretty wide range. And we saw that we had several formats, all these formats standardized by IEEE. I started off by talking about the half format just because fitting in 16 bits makes it nice and slides. It's not what we typically use in our programming languages. Typically you see floats or doubles, though the half precision format is really used, mostly by graphics cards. In all these formats, we have a certain number of sign bits. We have an exponent indicating, you know, the exponent 2 to the sum power. And we have our mantissa, which is the base, the number that comes before the power, the coefficient. We have this trick that we didn't represent the leading one, because binary floating point numbers, you always have 1 point something, because it can't be 2 point something, and it can't be 0 point something. So we have these bunch of representations, and something to note is that you don't have to memorize these exponent biases. The rule is that we all, in IEEE format, is we always do number of bits minus one, minus one. The idea is that this bit pattern, zero and all ones, always represents two to the zero. And that's usually how I remember it. Okay. And when we finished off last time, we were talking about converting numbers that we wrote down in, you know, human readable decimal to floating point. And our first step in doing that is always to convert to binary. And converting to binary is often a bit intimidating. So in the nice cases, you're going to say, oh, this is just something over a power of 2. So for here, you can say 0.25, that's 1/4, easy. But maybe you didn't see that. Maybe you don't have all the fractional powers of two memorized. We're not gonna have you do that. So how can you figure this out otherwise? The other sort of strategy is that you just subtract powers of two until you get zero. And you can subtract also fractional powers of two, negative powers of two. So you just say, okay, does 2 to the 4 fit? Yeah. And we know 2 to the 5 doesn't fit, it's too big, and we keep going. So that's our first step when converting. And when you have, in this case, a result like this, you know that you have 1 in the ones place, 0.010, this is the 2 to the 1s, 2 to the 2s, 2 to the 3s has a 1, and 2 to the 4s has a 1. And that's how you get the binary number from that. And when you want to actually convert this to floating point, you need to figure out, well, what's the exponent? And our general rule is that, well, we're gonna divide this by a power of 2, so it's between 1 and 2. So we find the power of 2 which does that. In this case, it's 2 to the 4. So we divide it by 2 to the 4, and we figure out what's on top and what's on bottom, and we get our thing with 1 point something, because that's the form we're going to use when we convert to our floating point, because we have 1 point something times 2 to the something. We need to figure out what that 2 to the something is. We've discovered from this process that it's 4 in this case. And the thing we're going to have to store in our mantissa is everything after the 1 point. So any questions about how I got this far? Yes?
So in the very last step, there's 3 zeros there, and then the one above it is 2 zeros.
That is just a typo, which is not on the next slide. Okay. Yes, that should be a 1, and I think I would have copied and pasted that, but apparently not. Yes, because on the next slide, I have it written out correctly. Okay, so once we do that, we are going to convert this to a floating point number. And in this case, I'm going to convert it to single precision, what we actually have in our float variables. And so as a first step for doing that, I've just extended our mantissa to 23 bits. And I did that just because I looked in that table and asked how big is the mantissa. It's 23 bits. And those are the bits that we store, the bits that are after the 1 point. That is, we include in every number. And I also need to know what's the sign, because I'm going to have to choose the sign bit. And I know the exponent, it's 2 to the 4 in this case. So I just look at these components one by one and figure out what I'm going to store. I have a plus sign, and I know that just like in normal integers, I'm going to use 0 for positive, 1 for negative, so I'm going to store a 0 in the place where the sign bit goes. Then I'm going to look at my exponent. I'm doing it in this order because the way IEEE stores numbers is sign, exponent, mantissa. Always that order, no exceptions. The way you can remember this is we store the most important part of the number first. And whether it's positive or negative has the biggest effect on the value, then the exponent has the next biggest effect, then the mantissa. And we have our bias, and you remember our bias was 2 to the number of exponent bits minus 1, the quantity minus 1. That's 127, which I had in that table before. You could just memorize it. So I take that and I write it out as a base 2 number in 8 bits, because the table told me there are 8 bits of exponents. So this is my first 9 bits of the number, and then I have my mantissa without the leading 1 point, which we just don't store, and that's the rest. And so I get this bit pattern. So any questions about this process? This is actually part of the InLab, so you should actually know how to do it. Yes?
Is the green part in Little India, so is it like from the lab, or is it?
So you ask whether the green part's in Little India. So remember when we talked about Indianness, it matters whether we have a way of numbering or saying what's first. So the way I've written it down, in some sense, this part is first. So, and that's the most significant part. And this is, as for what order it's actually stored in memory, that might be a bit different. But I've written this out, so the most significant part is on the left consistently. And when we're worried about, well, what bits does that end up being in our machine, it's going to be as if I interpreted this whole thing as a base 2 number and stored it in an integer, as far as where the bytes go, which means that on the Little Endian system, these bottom parts are going to be in the first byte. Does that make sense? Trying to be careful about this. Okay, so this is doing it by hand, of course. Yeah.
Why is the exponent 8 bits when it says 5?
Oh, that's because, again, I copied from a different slide. Should be 8. I copied from half bit, the half precision slide, which I made first. And I figured I'd put the number of exponent bits on the slide and not look at it carefully. Okay, so. Hopefully taking notes will make me actually correct these slides in the Git repo, so they'll be correct this afternoon. Yes?
What's the point of having a bias for the float?
So the question is, why do we have a bias for the float? So it would be a perfectly valid option to store, say, a 2's complement number. This is not what IEEE chose. I think the main justification is when you're doing math in floating point, you don't actually care where 2 to the 0 is. Like, it almost never comes up. You just care about getting the exponents, about adjusting your two numbers so the exponents match so you can do your calculations, for the most part. So I think they felt it would make the hardware easier to make, and also gives them a bit more flexibility as far as choosing how many small and large numbers they can represent than if they chose 2's complement. That's, I assume, the reason for it. But like, you could make a floating point format, and I would be surprised if there were not floating point formats where the exponent was represented as just a 2's complement number. Yes?
Since it only stores that leading 1, is it impossible to actually store a 0 in a float?
Yes. So you have a leading 1. Can we not store 0 as a float? So with what I told you, yes, it's not possible. Later on, we'll see how it's done, but there's a special case, because with the rules I've given you, you can't store 0. Okay. So something about floats. Oh, and I didn't highlight this correctly. So we can also convert to, to floating point, and I'll do this, divide this number up that correctly. We can also convert from floating point to binary, of course, in C++. Our floating point numbers are stored somewhere. And one thing that exists in C++, that's a feature that can help you do this, is something called unions. So a union is kind of like a class with all public members, where we're saying that the two parts, that all the members of the union are stored in the same memory. So when I stuff a float in this union and I read out the unsigned integer, I'm actually reading the same memory location, the same bytes, And this is a way we can see that it's as if I store that unsigned int. And so this is a way I can print out the value of a float directly, in this case, as hexadecimal. So you can use this to check what's going on. You can do something similar with doubles and unsigned longs, because they're the same size. And this is a way of doing that, which is perhaps easier than the convert to unsigned care pointer trick I showed before. Yes?
What happens if you store a float and then store the unsigned int?
What happens if I store a float and then I store an unsigned int? It's the same memory, so last thing that was written would be what's stored there. So if I stored an unsigned int and then read the float, I would be converting that unsigned int to a float based on the bit pattern. Yes?
Are f and u are like a private value in the class? Are they like?
So the question is, are these f and u things would look like class instance variables, are they private? There's no, in this example, everything is public. I'm not actually sure. I think unions in C++ can have private members, but I'm not sure that's true. Either case, it's pretty much never used, because when you have a union like this, you have to know which member is actually the one you care about. And generally, that means you only use unions as part of a bigger class or something like that. And in this class, this is basically the only purpose we will use unions for. It's just showing what bits are stored in something. Okay. Any other questions? Okay. So let's go through another example, and let's convert point 1, base 10, to a float. So first thing we need to do is we need to convert it to a binary number. And that actually gets pretty tedious. And one thing we can do is we can use the trick of let's subtract out powers of 2. In this case, we're going to start with negative powers of 2. So we say, 1/16, 2 to the minus 4, that fits. 2 to the minus 32, that fits, and keep subtracting out, and we get this smaller and smaller overall remainder. And you'll find out eventually that it's a repeating binary des number, like so. After a lot of tedious work, hopefully with the calculator. I guess I should note that you can do this with binary long division. So here we're dividing 10 in binary by 1 in binary and doing all the work of normal long division, of doing subtraction in binary. There's some carrying that's happened that's not being explicitly shown. But that's how you get that. So it's tedious. I think you can do it. But that's the work we're doing. So we get this repeating fraction. And then we say, okay, we need to move the binary point over 1, 2, 3, 4 places. So I get 2 to the minus 4 as my exponent, and I get my mantissa. And I have to do something funny at the end here. So I have this highlighted 1. So it turns out that the real pattern of the number, it continues 0, 1, 1. And we can't represent that exactly, and it keeps going. So we have another 0, 0, 1, 1, and so on. We've run out of bits. We can't represent it exactly. So we're just going to round to the closest number. And in this case, the rounding means we put a 1 at the very end, even though there was a 0 in that place. And so we have our same pattern here, and our same typo about the number of bits in our exponent. And we can convert that component by component to our floating point number. And this is exactly what you get if you store point 1 in a float in C++. So any questions about any step of this procedure? Yeah.
So we round up if like the next digit's a one and we round, keep it at like.
So the question is, what direction do we round? So in this case, the digits afterwards are 0, 1, 1. So it's greater than 1/2 left over. So we have to round up. If it was 0, 0, 1, we'd always round down. But a good question is, what happens if I end, if the remaining digits were something like, if I had 1, 1, and then I had 1, and I needed to round to here? What would I do? And this is a way, place where multiple choices are made. The default choice in IEEE floating point, but not the only one you can get, is to round, is some, a rule called round to even, which is to round so the last bit is 0 in the case where you have exactly 1/2. But in this case, there's no choice to make because what's left over is a little greater than 1/2 because we have 0.11 left over. Which in binary, which is over 3/4. So we always round up, that's the closest thing. There's no, it's not, we're not halfway in the middle. Okay, other questions? Okay, so something you can note about this is that just because of the way binary works, that we couldn't represent this number exactly. And this is something you can observe in real code. So here I'm storing 0.1. The f at the end means this is a float, not a double constant, just to be extremely explicit. And I'm doing this loop where if it was exact, I'd expect to get, you know, probably 1 million. I'd end at 1 million, 0.1 times 1, 1 million. Would be, or 10 million, sorry. I'd end at 10 million. 0.1 times 10 million would be less, not less than 10 million. 0.1 times 9,999,000 and so on would be. But in fact, I end slightly early. And this is the output I'll get. If you actually run this, that's what you'll get. You'll get that every time. It's not random. This is just because the number we actually represented is slightly larger than 0.1 because we rounded up. Yes? Do you have to have the f after 0.1? I do not believe so. But technically, if you don't have the f, it's a double constant that's being then converted back to a float, which will still work, but that's what's. That's what a normal constant in C++ is, a double, a normal real constant. Yeah?
Does a double also have this problem?
Does a double also have this problem? Yes. So let's say we were doing this for a double. What would change is I'd have more exponent bits. That doesn't change anything because my exponent's exact. And I'd have more manticibits. I'd have about twice as many manticibits, but I'd still have this problem. At the end, I'd have some bits left over I wasn't using, I need to choose a rounding, and it would still be inexact. It would just, instead of having, so I might need a number bigger than 10 million to notice this though, might need like a billion or something like that for this kind of example. But yes, it's just inevitable just because we're using binary powers of binary to represent things. Other questions? Okay, so we've seen that the number is slightly too big, so we get a result which is slightly too small when we try to measure it. How about we measure it in a different way? So here I'm just adding 0.1 over and over again, and we've learned that it's slightly too big, so you'd expect maybe that I'd get a result that's slightly too small, and that's not what happens. I get a result that's slightly too big. So any ideas what's going on here? Yeah, so at some point we had to round down. So the question is when, because, well, we already did our rounding for this part, and the answer is in this plus equals operation. That at some point, because we had things lined up differently, we got an inexact calculation, because we shifted bits over, didn't get an exact answer, and we had to round down. And you can see this if you say, print out the numbers. You can see that, yeah, we start out slightly bigger than 0.1, but eventually we get to a point where when we do the calculation, we need to fit our result in 23 bits after the binary point, and that ends up stripping off a 1, and we get a result which is slightly too small. And we'll talk more about what this means in a bit. So any questions on what's happening here, that sort of floating point rounding? Okay. So we've talked about going from decimal numbers to normal things. How about the other direction? So I have here a floating point number, and I want to convert it back to decimal. So the first step I'm going to do is I'm going to split it up into its pieces. I have a sine bit, exponent bits, mantissa bits. I'm going to figure out what parts of the number they are. I've written out this number the way it was stored in, say, an unsigned int, what I would read out there. So I know the top, the most significant bit I see here, the leftmost bit is the sine bit, then the exponent bit, then the mantissa bit. So I can just identify that. So here I have my sine bit, I have my exponent bits, everything left over is the mantissa bits, not including the leading 1 point. And so then I translate this piece by piece. I can say, okay, I have my sine bit, it's a 1, 1 means negative, because 0 means positive, so I have a minus sign in front of my number. Then I have my exponent, I know the bias for float is 127, and this value is 128, so I subtract 127 from it, get 1. And then I have my mantissa, so I add my leading 1 point, and then I add the mantissa bits, and most of them are 0, because this is an example I want to do on a slide. And then I can find out that either I have minus 1.11 times 2 to the 1, and I can figure out that's minus 11.1, or I can do this by just saying that's 2 to the 0 plus 2 to the minus 1 plus 2 to the minus 2, all times 2 to the 1. The second form is probably easier if we did something like make this exponent here be like 2 to the 3 minus 127. 2 to the minus 125, you wouldn't want to write out 0.0000 and expect to get the right answer. So, any questions on what I've done here? Yeah.
Where did the third one come from?
The third one?
Yeah.
This one here?
Further over, it's negative 11, or negative 1.1.
This is this number, 1.11,
yeah.
Times 2 to the 1, so I shifted the binary point over 1. Just like multiplying by 10 shifts the decimal point over 1. Is that?
I think he's asking, like, when we like go to the mantissa, we need out that leading 1.
Yes. So the extra point, 1 point at the end is that we just don't store the leading 1 point in the mantissa at all, because we know the number is always between 1 and 2. Other questions? Okay. And so we can like do this again. So here, same procedure. So first step is split up the number into sine bit, exponent bits. And here we have zero, so it's positive. Take our mantissa bits, write them out, and we say, take this. This is 131 if you convert it to decimal, minus 127, that's 2 to the 4. So I get 1.1001, the 1001 from the mantissa, the 1 point because we always have a 1 point at the beginning. That times 2 to the 4. That means I shift the binary point over 4 places, so I get 25. I evaluate that binary number as decimal. And alternately, I could do the strategy where you just say it's 2 to the 0 plus 2 to the minus 1 plus 2 to the minus 4, all times 2 to the 4, and do a lot of annoying math in this case to get my answer if I didn't want to work with the binary number as soon as possible. Okay. Any questions on this? So hopefully be comfortable doing this. I'd like to also note, let's think about what floating point addition looks like. So here I have two floating point numbers and I want to add them together. And if you remember what I told you, the trick about the bias, that this is an exponent here. So these bits here are the exponent bits because they're the bits after the sine bit, the 8 bits. And our bottom exponent here is 2 to the 0. Our top one is 2 to the 1. So we can write out our number. We have positive 1.1001001 times 2 to the 1 for our first, plus 1.001, the 001 here, from here, times 2 to the 0. And the general thing you do, the computer is doing when it adds them, is just shifting the numbers over so they have the same exponent, doing the addition, and then converting that back to floating point. In the real case, in this case, I just converted it to base 10. And this is where we lose precision, by the way. So when we saw us losing precision, we got this number here, and this final result has a bunch of extra bits that, you know, maybe we didn't have before. And if we can't end up storing the thing in the size of mantissa we have, in this case we can, because it's actually 23 bits. But if we had a small mantissa, we'd run out of bits, even if we didn't start out with too many bits. Other questions?
Do you always shift down to 2 to the 0 power?
Do I shift down to 2 to the 0? Absolutely not. But you want to shift down to the same power. It doesn't matter which one. In a computer, they'll hopefully make a choice that's efficient. You can choose anything when you're doing it by hand. Okay. So we talked about converting to and from floating point, and some ideas about, you know, this should hopefully give you a hint of, you know, how computers are doing arithmetic on floating point without always like converting back to decimal, which they obviously aren't doing, and just keeping things as floats. So a note about what floating point can represent. So they're unevenly spaced. We've made this choice that we're gonna have like good representation everywhere. So we're going to be able to represent a lot of values, very big values, very small values. You can have an exponent of 2 to the 120. That's a very big number. Exponent of 2 to the minus 120. That's a very small number. But this means that we have some non-intuitiveness about what numbers we actually can represent. So this means, for example, in half precision, I'm using half precision, so this fits on a slide. If we take 1, the next floating point number in half precision after that is 1.001. So we added basically a thousandth, about. If we have 100, the next half precision floating point number after that is 100.06. So we've added 0.06, a lot bigger number. And this is a general property that we have, you know, more distance between bigger numbers. This is the same thing as with scientific notation. With scientific notation, if you change the last digit with a small number, it makes a small change. If you change it with a big number, it makes a big change in the value of the number. We have this non-uniformity in what values we can represent. Usually this is a fine thing because our notion is we want a certain number of digits of accuracy, not a certain accuracy as an absolute value. But if you're expecting some sort of absolute accuracy, like you want an answer to 1 cent, this probably doesn't work out so well. So, any questions about this idea? Okay. So, since we have these numbers we can't represent, earlier I mentioned this caused rounding issues. And a consequence, a very practical consequence of that issue, is that yes, you can compare floats and doubles with double equals or not equals. This works and does something, but it's usually not what you want. Because, well, here's a case where rounding has meant we have two different doubles. We have something which is slightly less than 0.3 and something which is slightly greater than 0.3. And probably you would not intuitively want to say these aren't equal. If you did this in a real program, you'd probably confuse whoever's trying to use the result of this. But they aren't equal. They're slightly different numbers. Because one was taken by multiplying 0.1, which was rounded in a particular way to be a binary floating point number, times 3. And the other was taken by converting 0.3 directly from decimal to a binary floating point number. And so they had slightly different rounding. Yes?
What's the function of set precision?
So the question is, what does set precision do? So set precision is a method on OStream, including cout, which sets the number of digits after the decimal point to print out floating point numbers with. So if I printed this out normally without doing that, I would not get all these digits here. I just get 0.3, 0.3, which is very confusing. And here, so I have a very high number of digits, so I'm getting way more information than most users would ever want instead. Okay. So what we typically would recommend you do is compare floating point numbers by subtracting, taking the absolute value, and comparing to some epsilon about of what accuracy you expect from the calculation. This has to be based on sort of how big is the numbers I'm going to be dealing with, and how much rounding errors do I expect or want to tolerate in my calculation, which depends on what you're doing, but this is usually the procedure we would recommend you use for comparing floating point numbers. Yes? Yes. Yes. The question was, if I didn't print it out to the full precision, would it still be not equal? Absolutely. Okay. So, and you want to be able to set these epsilon values, and that seems a bit tricky to do. A good rule of thumb. And you can get this by just thinking about how big a number can the mantissa represent. So that a float is about 7 decimal places, because a 23-bit number is about that much. And a double is about 15 decimal places, because whatever the size, 53-bit mantissa, 53-bit number is about that much. This is a rule of thumb. It doesn't actually tell you what's going on. Exactly. And a big reason for that is that there are things you can do when you're doing a floating point calculation which make your rounding errors much, much worse or much, much better. So a classic example is here are two floating point numbers which themselves can be represented exactly, and we add them together and we can't represent the results. So here we have 2 to the 100. We can represent that exactly as a floating point number. And 1. We can represent that exactly. We add them together, we're going to round to 2 to the 100. We're going to do nothing. Okay. This makes sense? Everyone understand why things will round this way? Okay. So given that, I have two calculations here. I'm just taking 2 to the 100, adding 2 to the 100, and subtracting 1, and I've just changed the order I do it in, because, you know, addition's associative, right? And commutative. Well, with floating point, that's not true. So if I add 2 to the 100 plus 1 and subtract 2 to the 100, I get 0. If I subtract 2 to the 100 from 2 to the 100 and add 1, I get 1. And this is the sort of thing which happens with floating point numbers. And this is something that's sometimes called catastrophic cancellation. That when you take values of very different magnitudes and add and subtract them, you get these huge errors with floating point. Mostly because, well, we have to move the number over so they have the same exponent, and we just lose a lot of bits off the end when we do that. Here, we want to move both numbers over, so we're about at 2 to the 100, and we have to shift that 1 all the way over until we run out of mantissa bits. And this happens a lot in general. And if you're doing calculations where it's important to actually represent the result well, you want to avoid this. In particular, when you're thinking about, for example, math with matrices, it comes up often that people will do things in a particular way because they avoid adding and subtracting values of very different magnitudes and tend to have smaller errors for that reason. Okay. So why don't I finish up with a topic I promised we'd get to, which was zero. So zero, it's very important. We want to represent zero, but we can't do it with an implicit one. And our solution is to have a special case. And our special case is that the exponent of all zeros with a mantissa of all zeros is going to mean zero, even though with what I've told you before, it shouldn't. It should be 1.00000. As a special case, just for zero, all zero exponent, all zero mantissa is plus or minus zero. We'll also do something special with the all ones exponents. So all ones exponents and a zero mantissa is going to be a special value we're going to call positive infinity, or if the sine bit is 1, negative infinity. And these are what we're going to do when we have overflow. So in integer arithmetic, when we had overflow, we just wrapped around. With floating point arithmetic, when we have overflow, we're just going to give this special value negative or positive infinity. We also have to worry about underflow. What we're going to do for that is we're going to give 0. Note that 0 can be plus sign, have a sign, it's positive or negative, and they are in fact values you will get from different operations, depending on, for example, the sign of your operands when you're doing some calculation which underflows and therefore results in 0 because it's too small to represent. We also have another category where we have all ones for the exponent bits and we have some non-zero mantissa, which is called not a number, or NaN. And this is what we use to represent values which don't make sense. So when you divide by 0 normally, you expect like your program to crash. The usual thing for floating point is when you divide by 0 in a way which doesn't make sense, we're going to give you not a number. When you divide by 0 in a way which seems like it should produce overflow, like it seems like your 0 was produced by having something which really should be slightly bigger than 0, it might give you positive infinity instead, or negative infinity. The assumption being that that 0 there is really supposed to be like 2 to the minus 1,000. And similarly, if you say take the square root of negative 1, they'll give you not a number, because we don't have a way of representing imaginary numbers. And I have this remaining special case that we're not going to care about very much in this class, that we're definitely not going to test you on, called the normal numbers, I might mention a bit later. So any questions about any of these? So we have these special cases, most importantly because we care about representing zero, but this is how we also deal with overflow and underflow. So now that you know about these special cases, we can find out about the range of our floating point values. So this is for single precision float. Our smallest exponent is all zeros and a one, because we can't do all zeros, that's special, that's zero. So the smallest magnitude is we do that, we have a mantissa of all zeros, so that's 2^1 minus the bias, so 2^-126. That's the smallest number we can represent in a single precision float. Does this make sense? So similarly, for the maximum value, we take our exponent as all ones, but one less than that because all ones is special, it would be infinity or NaN. We want an actual normal value and a mantissa of all ones. So this is a bit trickier. So we have 1.11111 and so on, 23 ones after the binary point. And that turns out to be almost 2^2 here. This whole value here, this is almost 2. So, and we're multiplying it times 2^127 after we take into account the bias. So we have 2^128 minus a little bit. It's almost 2^128. This is our largest value we can represent as a single precision float. Yes?
So is it not 2^104 that we're subtracting?
104? What do you mean not 2 to the... Okay, yes, it is 2^104. It's a little bit relative to 2^128.
Okay.
That's 128 minus 24. So, you know. So it's like a millionth of 2^128. So relative to 2^128 is a little bit less. I guess it's in absolute terms, yes, it seems like it's a lot less than 2^128. Yes.
Why do we have 2^104 again?
What's the 2^104? This is, so this is this value here, this is 2^-24. Which you can figure out by like doing the summation. If we had 1.1 is 2^-2, I believe. Minus 1, I should say, and so on. I think minus 24, I'm not actually sure if that's right, but that's the sort of formula you use to get it, and you extend that, you get that it's 2^(2^power). When we add up 1, 1 half, 1 fourth, and so on. What's left over is 2^-negative something. Any other questions on this? Okay. So a brief note, and we won't test you on this, on denormals. So denormals are that remaining category I showed you. We're not going to ask you about them ever, but I just want you to know they exist. So this is where we have all zeros for the exponent and a non-zero mantissa. And basically all this does is it gets rid of the implicit one-point rule. And so we have to represent that first digit. This lets us represent really, really small numbers, which turns out to be useful for worrying about floating point rounding. So we're not going to test you on that. Just wanted you to know they exist if you come across them. And another note is that we can store, we have base 10 floating point. But people really do base 2 floating point. People do base 10 floating point too. This is another option we could use. And it would be really nice if we say cared about storing point 1 exactly. If we had base 10 floating point, where our exponent is 10^something, we can store that exactly now. And if you care about numbers for humans, or say mighty numbers, you might like this better. And there is an IEEE format for this. It's just not so widely supported. There's some hardware which supports it, but it's not common. But it's another option we would have. And similarly, we stored our binary, our integers in base 2. We could have stored them in base 10. This is a thing people, some systems really do because they really care about converting back to a human readable format and so on, or having a known number, a set of numbers that make sense being representable. But it's just not something we commonly do because we think it's nicer to have our hardware be built for the maximum possible set of base 2 values. Okay. That's all I have for today. So next time we'll talk about arrays and Big O.